Hello everybody. You call yourself vegan and you still drive a car? Welcome to Vegan Talk. I'm Anthony.
And I'm Paul.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Today we are talking about all things cars and veganism. Now, obviously, there are certain parts of cars that contain animal products, probably more than you're aware of. We're going to look at that today. We're going to look at some of the places where vegan-friendly alternatives are being pushed more than others. And we're going to talk about, well, can you even be vegan if you're driving a car in the first place? Lots to get stuck into. And as you've heard at the top of the show, it's not just me, because this would be a very short episode about cars. If it was, we've got Paul, who is our self-confessed vegan car nerd. Enough of the falafel. So we're very lucky to have him with us. Paul, let's get the ball rolling with the basics. The first thing that's important for people to know, like where in the car, on the car, might we be seeing examples of animal exploitation in terms of those products?
Hi, Anthony. Yeah, well, in a word, it's all over the place. And there's obviously the bits that people will be aware of and that spring to mind. So if you look at the interiors, you know, leathers, suede, etc., very prevalent, car seats, steering wheels, gear knobs. Luxury cars could be a whole headlining, you know, of material. But there is, as you alluded to, there's a lot of stuff here that I think, you know, people don't know about or even forget about. So, you know, there's fats in basic steel production and rubber production from animals that exist. You've got things like stearic acid, an animal-based stearic acid, because there's non-animal-based stuff in things like tyres. And you can even sort of consider what I'd call sort of associated products. So, you know, when you've got your car, you obviously want to usually keep your car clean. So shampoos and air fresheners and chamois leathers, I guess, things like that, that are obviously not vegan. So yeah, there's a whole range of stuff there that is problematic, I guess, for vegans.
Yeah, I remember back in the day when I first went vegan, I picked up a brilliant book. It was called something like Hello, I'm a Vegan Freak. And it was brilliant. I don't know if it's still in print or you can still find it. But I remember that very vividly, giving tyres, both car tyres and bicycle tyres, as an example of why it's not possible to be a quote 100% vegan. And that's partly why the Vegan Society makes its definition of veganism include the sort of caveat that you're avoiding the use of animal products wherever is possible and as much as is practically possible. But it gave car tyres and bicycle tyres as a reason for, well, you just can't get vegan versions. That's not necessarily true anymore, is it?
Yeah, so I believe that, and listeners might want to correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think for some time now, Michelin, as a manufacturer of tyres, is oft quoted as one brand, and I think possibly the only brand that is vegan. So, you know, it's a sort of consideration that people might want to make when they're purchasing those, because obviously tyres, you have to be changing them relatively frequently. But yeah, if I'm wrong there, please correct me. But that's my very short research has shown me that is the brand that would work for people.
Well, I guess because it's a burgeoning field, there's not necessarily the same standards and criteria for labelling on these things. Like with food, we're very lucky in the UK with food, like things have to be labelled very clearly with all of the ingredients. And if we don't have a suitable for vegans on it, we can work out whether it is or not. But with regards to car tyres and things like that, there's not necessarily a standard at the moment. So we're having to do our research, aren't we, to find these things out. And it can change, it can flip-flop. One day a company might be using a non-animal-based glue, and then the next day they are, which makes it quite tricky, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I guess there's, you know, I'm assuming these manufacturers, you know, if we take Michelin, for example, have maybe not seen the benefit in promoting their products in this way, possibly because they don't think the interest is there, or that that it's not necessarily like a positive for them, possibly even to manufacture it in that way.
Despite this whole raft of animal products, animal derived products that traditionally have been part of cars, both interior and exterior, and everything in between. We are seeing more and more, aren't we, vegan alternatives or even, quote, completely vegan cars being put out there. Now, obviously, there are lots of articles online, blogs and things where people are updating this all the time. But I just thought maybe to kick things off in terms of how we can, as a vegan, be looking to buy cars or parts of cars. Like, how do you go about it? Because presumably you're trying to make your car purchasing and your car choices as vegan as it is possible to do so. How do you go about that personally?
So, yeah, I mean, I do focus on the interior, which I guess is probably the same probably for most vegans, because it's the most obvious stuff that's in your face, isn't it, really? So there's been a lot of manufacturers, there's been some specific manufacturers who have touted themselves as providing animal-free interiors. So I guess the big players over the last few years, Tesla, who used to offer leather and non-leather interiors, but have now moved to animal-free interiors entirely, I believe. And then Polestar, who are a sort of spin-off from Volvo, promote animal-free interiors. There are other manufacturers who promote certain types of their cars, so not the, you know, all their cars, as having interiors that are available that are vegan. Again, usually optional. The frustrating thing with that, I found, is that in some vehicles, that can amount to a huge cost. One that I have mentioned before on this show is Porsche. If you take a real top-end example, you know, it's a very expensive car. But if you want a leather interior in that, from memory, and again, I might be slightly off here, it was somewhere between an additional, to take the animal skin out, an additional £6,000 to £8,000. It's, you know, and you think of, that's the cost of a good car for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You're paying them to take out an animal product to put in a synthetic alternative. It's kind of grueling, isn't it? And it's enough. If I necessarily had the money to buy that sort of car, it would put me off, because I'm like, well, it's a bit like paying for oat milk at Starbucks or something, isn't it? You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of, it grinds a bit. So these are sort of, there are sort of relatively well-known manufacturers, and there are manufacturers who sort of promote options. And so, you know, when you go to your dealerships and read online, there are some good articles out there by people and other people like PETA that have talked about it, although it tends to be sort of American focused, obviously. One channel I use quite a lot, and I'll have my best go at saying this because it's in German, but there is a kind of car channel called Autogefuel, and there is a guy on there, a lovely guy called Thomas, who has been promoting animal-free interiors in cars for quite a few years now. He's made various videos about it. He's, you know, well-known in the auto industry, so he's got a decent platform, and he's a sort of good alternative to your sort of Top Gear knobheads, for want of a better phrase. So he's a lovely guy, always sort of reviews cars and talks about the animal-free interior and animal-free aspects of it. Really good. Yeah, interesting to look at. But there is articles out there. There's people out there that know a hell of a lot more than me anyway. But, you know, I think the awareness and the demand from customers, rather, is starting to become clear. You know, even my own experience going into Volkswagen, nearly buying a car from them, and not being able to do it just because of the sake of some animal skin on a steering wheel, which they couldn't change. And the guy was gobsmacked that he was like, I'm so sad, I can't sell you this car just because of the steering wheel. I was like, me too, because I'd have bought it. So maybe you want to do something about it. So.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, it's difficult because, I mean, all car companies are huge companies. So it can be tempting to feel like your voice doesn't make a difference, but actually if it's like any social justice movement, isn't it? Like, if enough voices are sounded and are heard by people cumulatively, they can make a difference. I mean, I'm looking at an article here that came out early January 2023 that's listing the total number of vegan friendly car models. This is in terms of the interior, and like we say, it doesn't include things like, oh gosh, there could be some stearic acid in the tires, there could be some animal fats in the steel. But you have got significant differences between certain companies, and actually if you said to Ford, for example, I'm going for your car, I'm going to spend my money on your car because I can see that you're offering so much choice in vegan interior. It says on this article, this is admittedly over a year ago, that there are 28 different vegan friendly car models. I'm going for you over Fiat, Mini, Porsche, each of whom only had one choice. Like, if enough people did that, that would make a difference. Like, do you think there's anything in that kind of siding with a company that's putting lots of choice out there? Same as going to a restaurant that has a whole vegan menu rather than just one option, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, money talks. I think, you know, whoever you pick, if you pick Ford, they'll be looking at their sales of that material, and it will need to be enough to justify continue making it and providing it. So, you know, you've got to put your money where your mouth is, haven't you, ultimately, I think, with this sort of thing, and support that option. Obviously you can't buy all the cars, that'd be great, but yeah, can't do that. But yeah, it has to be done that way. There's other bits here, isn't there? I think this is, you know, leather is traditionally a luxury product, I guess, that's been ingrained, that's probably the wrong phrase, in us to see it as that. And it's almost trying to remove leather from that kind of luxury goods viewpoint and think, actually, it's a pretty horrible product. Manufacturers don't actually like using it. I've got someone who worked quite a long time and in a high position at Toyota. They hated doing cars in leather. It's so much hassle. Product fails. In the winter it's cold, in the summer it burns your legs off, sort of thing. I know some of the vegan replacements do act in the same way, but you've got the option to kind of maybe tailor that a little bit more, potentially. So yeah, it's kind of trying to take the kudos away from these products to sort of say, hey, look, I've got an animal interior, like there's 17 cows on this roof lining here, great. It's quite macabre when you think about it, isn't it? So
yeah, absolutely. And it's like you say, it's just changing that cultural norm and that cultural expectation. I certainly know a lot of people who would just automatically see leather as a sign of, you know, affluence, or it's got a genuine leather such and such in it. That's just automatically seen as a status thing, isn't it? Yeah,
absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, not everybody is going to feel comfortable buying a second-hand car that has got leather in it, but if you are doing that, for example, like buying used cars is an option, isn't it, in terms of, just aside from the environmental impact of, you know, you're saving a completely new car being manufactured. You know, if you're buying a used car, so long as you're not replacing it with parts or fittings that have animal products in a sense, that is a completely vegan choice with regards to you're not paying anybody to produce any more animal product parts, aren't you, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I know that would probably be a tricky one out there for some vegans, because people won't like having that product or having that product almost in their name. But I mean, perhaps an interesting personal comparison I can say is, and when I bought my house, the guy wanted to sell me his sofa, which was leather. And I said, no, I don't want it, mate. Then he found out he couldn't actually get it out of the house. And I thought, and it came down to kind of almost the deal being done on the house. So I bought those sofas, and I thought, I don't want them, but I'm going to use them until they basically are no longer in use. I've still got them now, and I do find I have to apologize to vegans when they come around and say, I know I've got the sofas and it looks bad, this is the reason. I didn't go out and buy new or anything like that. But I also know that for some vegans, and your example there of buying secondhand car with leather interior wouldn't appeal to them, I guess. So I suppose you have to recognize that. I'm in line with you, I think, myself, because I'd like to think I'm practical, but others would probably question my vegan credentials, I suspect, if I said that.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess just from my point of view, it's, yes, of course, it sends a strong message potentially to a secondhand car dealership if you say to them, I know this is a secondhand product, but I'm not happy giving you money for something that contains animal products. And that's a fair enough perspective to take. However, no matter whether you say that message or not, even if you bought a secondhand car that is completely covered in leather, obviously you've got to feel physically comfortable and emotionally comfortable with being around that every day. But actually, no extra cows have met their end because of your money, have they? Yeah. Well, as far as I can see anyway.
Yeah.
This could be a completely different discussion, and I'm sure there are many motoring podcasts where this is discussed, but there are factors to consider with buying a secondhand car versus a new car in terms of, I guess, I mean, you correct me where I'm wrong, Paul, but pros of buying a secondhand car are that you're not paying for new materials and new manufacturing costs, but maybe a cons could be that maybe that car is not as efficient and as kind to the environment, and also it might be costing more in terms of upkeep, and it still might need new parts and servicing and things like that. So it's not a clear cut one.
Yeah, it is, and that it all comes down on the individual car choice, doesn't it? Really, because you could buy a brand new uneconomical car or a really efficient old car, or vice versa. Really, so. If you're going to buy something that's going to do 17 miles to the gallon, you know, like an old Rolls Royce or new Rolls Royce, it's going to be a completely different proposition to buying an older diesel or something like that. And then obviously electric cars are another big thing now. I mean, I think that sort of shows it's another massive direction that the motoring industry is going in. Although, you know, if you consider that from a vegan perspective, I was thinking about this earlier on, it kind of demonstrates how the industry has had a major turnaround to what they do, but based on essentially environmental reasons or environmental arguments, shall we say. I know there's people that will argue that it's not all that it seems, but it is a massive move to the production of batteries over engines, which is a fundamental part of the car. So I suppose you could say changing your interiors surely shouldn't be as big a deal as that if the demand is there. If the demand from individuals or demand dictated by governments and other agreements comes through, they can change. So that's maybe some hope, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I reckon I've met hundreds and hundreds of vegans, possibly into the thousands, just through going to festivals, being part of different communities and running a couple of vegan businesses over the years. I think I've only met one person who claimed that they chose not to drive a car because that everybody driving their own individual car resulted in more animal deaths than if everybody got public transport. What are your thoughts on that, Paul? I've got my own opinions, but I'd be interested to hear what you think first.
So I guess, you know, I've driven since I've been 17, and I've had the unfortunate instance of hitting animals a couple of times, and it makes you feel sick. It's horrible. You could argue, well, if you drive, that's inevitable, and we all know when you're driving along the motorway and it's summer, you're going to be hitting quite a few insects. That's a given. You totally are, and there's probably an argument to say, again, you can never be vegan because of that. However, if you take the view that most people need a vehicle, whether that's for work or for family, or even if you are an ardent field saboteur or something like that, if you've got to go out into the middle of the countryside, sadly, the fact of the matter is that is very difficult to do, even if you combined public transport, which is, you know, a bit flaky in this country, even if you combine that with, say, a push bike. Not impossible, but highly difficult, especially if you want to take equipment and things like that. So I do personally come back to the view there that, you know, driving can be for a greater good, it can be for day-to-day convenience, and it can be for stuff like just going to work and earning money, which you may then choose to put into buying vegan products and carrying out vegan activities. So I see it as a balance, and it is that far as is practically possible argument. Yet again, I think for me, I've always been comfortable driving. I've never been comfortable on the occasions I've hit an animal. Absolutely not. Hate it. Feel awful for a long period of time. It's not a perfect experience, that's for sure, but it's overall one I think is justified.
I certainly wouldn't want to criticize anybody who felt that they couldn't live with the possibility of accidentally ending an animal's life because of their choice to drive a car, and therefore decided to live their life in a way that sought to avoid or minimize that as much as possible. Like I say, the person who I know who put forward this argument and lived their life that way, they did still get public transport, which they themselves acknowledged, well, animals are still getting killed by public transport, but their feeling was fewer per head of member of the population would die. So I wouldn't want to criticize anybody for doing that. And for me, I wonder whether it comes down to whether you are wanting to be as perfect, as vegan as you can be as possible, or whether you see your veganism as a form of disruption. So if we're looking to disrupt the norms of our society, then actually maybe we might need to compromise our own veganism to a tiny, tiny, tiny proportion and increase the risk that we might hit an animal when we're driving, or maybe we might have to use businesses that ideally we might not want to, or we have to pay taxes that subsidize things that we don't want to. Actually, if we see what we're doing as disrupting and trying to change a system from within it, then I'd say, yeah, probably driving if you want to, if you can, if that's going to enhance your advocacy and activism, then that's probably a good thing, I would say. Whereas if you're completely opting out of society's norms, then perhaps on balance you might be advocating for animals not quite as effectively. But it's going to depend, isn't it? It's going to depend.
It's a good point. Even just going back to what you're saying about the manufacturers, like we're trying to get more, say, even if it's just a less animal-based interiors, you can only really speak with your purchases and your money. I mean, you could protest against it or make protests, through other means. But buying that product that is offered is the sort of thing that's going to change direction. That's the way it is. I think it's we can't get away from that, like it or not.
Absolutely. Okay, Paul. So we've talked about things from a philosophical point of view there, and I think that's really valuable to do so. But what I really see this episode as being really helpful for our listeners being is having some solid information, some takeaways, some good tips, so that when we as vegans are trying to make the best choices we can with regards to car purchasing or servicing or getting parts or the choices we make, that we can do so with as much information as possible. So to start rounding things off, I wonder what top tips you might suggest listeners bearing in mind when they're making these choices.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first one's the obvious one. Do your research. If you're buying a new car, go and speak to the dealerships. You might not find they know a lot, but in a way it kind of triggers conversations. That in the amount of dealerships I've gone to, the amount of manufacturers I've gone to, new cars coming out, I've said, are you offering vegan interiors? And they're like, oh, don't know about that. So ask the questions, do the research, find out what you can. If it's secondhand, I mean, there are various publications available that talk about the different types of options that were available for that car when it was manufactured, so you'll better see, was there a vegan interior available, so that you know that you might want to rule out a particular car, particularly if it didn't come with a vegan interior. You can kind of cross it off the list, can't you, really? So yeah, definitely do research. I think also, I don't know, this one might be more controversial, but decide where your line is, I suppose, really. If you're going to accept that you're going to buy a car and you're going to accept that isn't going to be something you're going to be able to do 100% vegan, what are you willing to kind of look at here, in terms of what would you accept? Are you going to need to change the tires, for example? Are you going to a bit like what you said with the secondhand cars, are you willing to consider a secondhand car that has a leather interior? Are you comfortable with that yourself? Are you happy that that might present challenges to you? Would it maybe project the wrong image? Because I guess that's the sort of thing I'd be worried about, because people are constantly looking for vegan consistency, aren't they? It's like, yes, but it's sort of it might not help the cause or people's understanding of veganism or yourself around it. So yeah, there's some sort of top ones, I think, really. So common sense stuff, really, at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe know the manufacturers. Again, depends what you're looking for, because some of the things we've talked about today, like the positive movements in some of these manufacturers like Polestar, Tesla, Porsche, these are top-end things. I mean, you've got to have money for this. And I appreciate some people out there thinking, well, you know, my car, I can afford, I can buy something for a grand, you know, with insurance and all the other costs. So this is no good to me. Fair enough, I get that. So I suppose, you know, that is why the second-hand market is going to be... is going to be your only option potentially.
And you know, that links into one of my, I've got two sort of big takeaways from this conversation that's been absolutely essential. Like I've really, really valued it. So thank you. Actually putting some time into this decision for a lot of people, I think, is going to be really valuable and really important in that, I mean, we don't want to start tallying up numbers of animals affected by this purchase or another purchase, but probably living a vegan lifestyle in terms of your diet for a year is going to massively outweigh, even if you had a completely solid leather interior to your car, that's probably going to be outweighed by excluding animal products from your diet for a year. However, are you going to feel happy with yourself if the only option, you've been boxed into a corner, you've quickly got to get a car, it's short notice for some reason, and you've ended up having to make a compromised choice that is quite an expensive one, because most of us are not buying a new car every year. So we've got to be really happy with our decision. And actually, you know, if we accidentally buy a packet of crisps that happens to have milk powder in, as upsetting as that is, that decision is forgotten days later, thankfully, whereas we don't have that luxury, 99.9% of us, with a car. So actually knowing ahead of time, knowing before you're going to need to make that purchase, what are the brands that I feel I can trust? What is the information I need to be asking a salesperson? And actually, I mean, I think it's correct to say, Paul, that pretty much everyone working in car sales works on some sort of commission. So they really want to keep you happy. So actually, if you stay early doors, right, these are the deal breakers for me. This is important. And that's not to say veganism should be the only one. Of course, there are other factors that are important to you. But knowing that ahead of time is going to be a really valuable investment in time and information for you, actually, isn't it? Because otherwise, you're going to have to live with a choice that you might feel compromised with. And that would be a real shame.
Another one that came into my mind is just more of a kind of, I've made a point historically with some manufacturers and some cars I wasn't able to buy, especially ones that were new and coming out to the market. I've made a point of writing to the manufacturer saying, I'd love to buy your car, but I can't because you've chosen to not offer me an option that I can have. And it doesn't seem beyond the capability of a big car manufacturer to do that. Now that I know, I'm realistic, that email may go nowhere, but if a few people do it and a few more people do it, maybe they're going, oh, this seems to be, you know, there are people looking at these things, hopefully, and they're going, well, we're getting quite a few emails saying people can't buy the car because it's got a leather gear knob. And why don't we just offer a non-leather gear knob, because it'll cost us like 3p. You know, it's crazy.
As well, without being too cynical, like if you send that email, no one's going to follow it up with you in terms of saying, right, you said you wanted a vegan leather gear knob, and now we've created that. So now we are going to press gang you into buying this £30,000 car. Like, you don't have to be buying a car to send that email.
No, that's true.
That's a real quick, easy bit of activism you can do while you're waiting for the bus or whatever. That's a bad example, waiting for the bus. Well, maybe you're waiting for the bus because you don't drive and you're going to send that email. Who knows? But very, very quickly, just my second takeaway was, I did not know before researching this episode that Michelin did offer vegan tires, and I'm sure they're not available everywhere, and there'll be limitations and what have you. But I was very lucky 2 years ago to live for a year and a half in a beautiful place in the countryside. Really loved it. But the one downside was I got 4 punctures in 18 months. And when you get a puncture, you want to correct it quickly. And unless you've got hardwired into your brain, Michelin tires, see if you can get a vegan one. You're just going to go for the first thing you can. So keeping that in mind, I think, is a really good tip. And between us, we can reduce the amount of animal-based tires that are being used. So that was a really good tip, Michelin tires. Really grateful for that one.
The last one, sorry, just to come in there, really. I mentioned it at the start, like sort of associated products, because it made me think about even when you're cleaning your car inside out and air fresheners and stuff like that. That's something I really struggled with about a couple of years ago, because I looked at what I was using and thought, hang on a minute, these are probably animal tested, because sometimes you just forget, I think it's fair to say. So I did extensive research, and I ended up, even now, I'm not saying it's easy to find stuff, but having to order shampoos and other stuff from Germany, and not cheap, but it is out there, and you can get them, but and some of them are on Amazon now, I think, as well. But it's not, I think there's an open market out there for any people who have got the money to set up a business. Vegan car cleaning products, probably a bit of a gap in the market. They're out there, but they're not easy to acquire. And yeah, so that was another thing as well. Small factor, but you know, if you take care of your car, you know, it's a bit like household cleaning products. It's something you got to do normally. So and ideally want to avoid animal tested items in that sense.
Yeah, and you know, it's the way that capitalism works, is that the more these small startup companies that probably involve £10 plus post and packaging to get it sent across Europe for you in the first instance, or although that seems like a bit of an outlay now, like that's how they're going to get the support, and the idea is going to spread, and there's going to be proof of concept, and then in 5 years' time, hopefully every Halfords has got a vegan range for its you know, car shampoos and what have you. Or if not, I'm sure there'll be some secret recipes online that where you can make your own using lemon juice and something or other, I'm sure. Although don't follow that as just a blanket. Don't come to me if your car starts corroding because you've
covered in beans or something. Yeah.
I just thought if I rubbed some black-eyed beans, it'd be fine. Cool. Okay, well let's bring things to an end then. Thank you again, Paul, for your input there. That's certainly not a show I could have done by myself, so really grateful for your input there. Listeners, do let us know what you have thought about that. Maybe you've got a tip, maybe you've got a company that you're saying absolutely go for these guys, they did this for me for my car, or maybe you want to say, do you know what, this company here says they've got a vegan interior, but I've learned this and this. Maybe they're not as green as they're making out. We'd really love to hear from you. We have got a listener mailbag episode coming up in, I want to say 4 or 5 weeks' time now. So get your message in to enoughofthefalafel@gmail.com if you've got something that you want to share with us.
Yes, so thank you all for listening. And as Ant says, if there's anything you want to feedback on, or if there's anything that's been said that you think is wrong, do let us know. Based it on knowledge that I've got at the moment from my perspective, but I can be wrong. And just to remind listeners, there's obviously a vast back catalogue now of shows built up, and these are online. Do check those out as well.
Absolutely. And now looking forwards, our next episode from Enough of the Falafel is coming out on Monday. That will be a Vegan Week show. I am joined by Luke and Carlos and yourselves, of course. And we will be looking at the week's vegan and animal rights news. Anyway, that is enough of the falafel for this episode. I've been Anthony.
And I've been Paul, and you've been listening to Vegan Talk from Enough of the Falafel.